Molly, you have this young woman. Can you talk a little bit about her and particularly what happened when she first got treated?
Yes, she was a 31-year-old woman and had not an extensive period to figure out her diagnosis, but certainly a couple of months to try to figure out what was actually happening. Presented with shortness of breath and cough, got some antibiotics, got some steroids, had a CTPE after an ER presentation with worsening shortness of breath. No PE, couple of lymph nodes. They do a biopsy. They're non-diagnostic. A couple months later, she gets a skin rash that's biopsied as erythema nodosum. And then they repeat all of her scans and her lymph nodes have gotten worse. And so they finally get an excisional biopsy and she's diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease. And she gets all the staging workup, PET scan. She's got disease above and below the diaphragm. Everything's kind of lit up. And she gets treated initially with 6 cycles of AVD and BV. And a little bit about her socially is that she's a stylist, a hairdresser, and she's the sole breadwinner. She lives by herself. She's not married. She doesn't have kids. And one of the things that we worry about with, especially we talked about peripheral neuropathy, is that this is this woman's livelihood. And if she can't use her fingers or stand for long periods of time from the peripheral neuropathy, she's not going to be able to support herself. And so that becomes a difficult challenge. And so before we got started with therapy with her, we had long discussions about, you need to let us know right away. We need to act on it as quickly as we can. And so with every patient who receives any of these drugs, and certainly any treatment for Hodgkin's disease, 5 times before they get each therapy, someone asks them about their peripheral neuropathy. Someone says, are you having any numbness or tingling in your fingers or toes? And that's just a rote saying that everyone, from the minute they walk in and the nurses take their vital signs to the minute they get through infusion. So it's important to monitor them very quickly. And she actually had to have dose reduction of the BV early on, and then the vinblastine got reduced a couple of times and then eventually dropped at the end, and the benefit versus the risk of the neuropathy wasn't there. So she was able to maintain function. This is a picture of her PET scans before, it should say AVD and BV, and you can see that she's got clearly extensive disease above the diaphragm. She's got some stuff hanging out near her liver. Her bone marrow's all lit up. And then the second one is after she completes therapy. I think this is the final one. There's one in between that shows improvement. And so you can see that all of that disease has gone. And so she made it through very well with a terrific response, able to go back to work. One of the other things that we talked about in the beginning with a Hodgkin's disease patient, because of her age, is that we talked about fertility, and she decided that she didn't want to do any fertility preservation because she's single, although she doesn't have children, and it just wasn't the right time for her to, she was more interested in getting through chemotherapy and getting moving on the diagnosis. But we do consult the fertility service for all young patients who are of childbearing age before they get started on chemotherapy, particularly Hodgkin's disease, but any kind of chemotherapy that we're going to give.
So we're going to move on now, talk about follicular lymphoma. But Mike, any final comments if you've heard this case? Of course, she had a great response. It's not unusual in Hodgkin lymphoma. Hopefully, it may be a little bit more likely because of the regimen. Any comments about the case, Mike?
No, I think younger people, especially with higher risk disease, seem to benefit particularly from the AAVD regimen. I think the comments that have been made about the increased risk of cytopenias and need for growth factor, which we don't use with ABVD typically, and the neuropathy just needs a lot of close monitoring and management. And it's where I find that our infusion nurses often get information and hear things from patients that they may not tell me or they may not tell Kim, but the nurses know about it. So they're very much part of our monitoring of these patients when they're on study or on treatment.
Kim, any comments on the issue of fertility in younger patients with lymphoma in general and including a situation like this, Kim?
The fertility piece, I mean, it's brought up typically in the beginning of the education of treatment. It's more focused more on like the leukemics who get different types of regimen for fear of their risk of disrupting their fertility. usually a lot of times it's not usually a huge conversation that I'm aware of a choice of eggs and stuff, because a lot of people can have babies after ABVD. And I've seen people have babies, and we have actually several patients, they come back 2 or 3 years later with babies, one or two or three of them. They're always told ahead of time it may, but most of them have babies, especially in their 30s. I mean, I don't know what other people have experienced, but we have a lot of post-ABVD babies.
Once in a while, we get the during ABVD baby.
Yeah, that's how they get diagnosed.
Yeah.
So I will say that I put every female patient on Lupron.
Yep.
The other issue is that I leave it up to the patient about fertility. Mm-hmm. Now, this is much different than in Large Cell Lymphoma. Where in Large Cell Lymphoma, I realize you don't talk about fertility all that much because the disease is percolating along. But for Hodgkin lymphoma, you know, there is time, especially if the patient's period is in sync with what we want to do. I collect a lot of eggs, I must say. And whatever the patient wants is okay with me.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.